Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Today is May the 1st, Monday, and welcome to the Freedom Report. I am very happy to have you here today. I've got a very interesting topic, a very interesting story that I want to read to you all today. A little bit of red meat for the fans of the Freedom Report, something that I think you probably all had suspected, but one that I've got some data to verify for you all. Before we get into the show, first, a word from our sponsors. It's never too early to start thinking about your retirement, and there's never been a better time to invest in your future than right now. Adam Puff at Haddonfield Financial Planning is a trusted friend of the Freedom Report and someone who can help you make your money work for you. Don't work hard, work smart. Let Adam work for you. Call Adam Puff at 856-795-0471. That's 856-795-0471 for all your retirement, 401k, estate, small business, and other financial needs. That's 856-795-0471 and get your free consultation today. Securities offered through Securities America, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Wealth Management Associates, Inc., Haddonfield Financial Planning, Wealth Management Associates, and Securities America are unaffiliated. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gents. And today I've got a story from you that is from a site called The Daily Beast. And the author's name is Joel Kotkin. And it was a pretty fantastic piece and one that I think is, you know, definitely prime red meat for our listeners, and one that sort of confirms many of the suspicions that people had about the arrogance of the left, the arrogance of Democrats. The article is aptly named The Arrogance of Blue America, with a subtitle saying, if you want to see the worst impacts of blue policies, go to those red regions like upstate or New York or inland California in states they control. In the wake of the Trumpocalypse, many in the deepest blue cores have turned on those parts of America that supported the president's election, developing oikophobia, which is an irrational fear of their fellow citizens. The rage against red America is so strong that the New York Times predictably progressive Nick Kristof says his calls to understand red voters were my most unpopular idea. The essential logic, as laid out in a particularly acerbic piece in the New Republic, is that Trump's America is not only socially deplorable, but economically moronic as well. The kind-hearted blue staters have sent their industries to the abodes of the unwashed and taken in their poor, only to see them end up more bitter, white, and alt-right than ever. The red states, by electing Trump, seem to have lost any claim on usually wide-ranging progressive empathy. Frank Rich, the theater critic turned pundit, turns up his nose at what he calls hillbilly chic. Another leftist author suggests that working class support for Brexit and Trump means it's time to, quote, dissolve the, quote, more than 150-year-old alliance between the industrial working class and what one might call the intellectual cultural left. The fondest hope among the blue bourgeoisie lies with the demographic eclipse of their red state foes. Some clearly hope that the less educated, quote, dying white America, already suffering shorter lifespans in part due to alcoholism and opioid abuse, is destined to fade from the scene. Then the blue lords can take over a country with which they can identify without embarrassment. In seeking to tame their political, quote, inferiors, the blue bourgeoisie are closer to the Marie Antoinette school of political economy than any traditional notion of progressivism. They might seek to give the unwashed red masses, quote, cake in the form of free health care and welfare, but they don't offer more than a future status as serfs of the cognitive aristocracy. The blue bourgeoisie, notes urban analyst Aaron Wren, are primary beneficiaries of the decoupling of success in America. Very true. In Blue America, he notes, the top tiers no longer need the overall prosperity of the country to personally do well. They can become enriched as a small, albeit sizable, minority. Some on the left recognize the hypocrisy of progressives abandoning the toiling masses. Blue state secession is no better an idea than the Confederate secession was, observes one progressive journalist. Quote, the Confederates wanted to draw themselves into a cocoon so they could enslave and exploit people. The blue state secessionists want to draw themselves into a cocoon so they can ignore the exploited people of America. Ironically, many of the most exploited people reside in blue states and cities. Both segregation and impoverishment has worsened during the decades-long urban comeback, as even longtime urban enthusiast Richard Florida now notes. Chicago, with its soaring crime rates and middle-class out-migration amidst a wave of elite corporate relocations, epitomizes the increasingly unequal tenor of blue societies. In contrast, the most egalitarian places, like Utah, tend to be largely Trump-friendly. Among the 10 states and D.C. with the most income inequality, 7 supported Clinton in 2016, while 7 of the 10 most equal states supported Trump. If you want to see worst impacts of blue policies, go to those red regions like upstate New York, controlled by the blue bourgeoisie. Backwaters like these tend to be treated at best as a recreational colony that otherwise can depopulate, deindustrialize, and in general fall apart. In California, much of the poorer interior is being left to rot by policies imposed by a Bay Area regime hostile to suburban development, industrial growth, and large-scale agriculture. Policies that boost energy prices 50% above neighboring states are more deeply felt in regions that compete with Texas or Arizona, and are also far more dependent on air conditioning than affluent, temperate San Francisco or Malibu. 6 of the 10 highest unemployment rates among the country's metropolitan areas are in the state's interior. The blue bourgeoisie's self-celebration rests on multiple misunderstandings of geography, demography, and economics. To be sure, the deep blue cities are vitally important, but it's increasingly red states and regions that provide critical opportunities for upward mobility for middle and working class families. The dominant blue narrative rests on the idea that the 10 largest metropolitan economies represents over 1/3 of the national GDP. Yet this hardly proves the superiority of Manhattan-like density. The other 9 largest metropolitan economies are, notes demographer Wendell Cox, slightly more suburban than the national major metropolitan area average, with 86% of their residents inhabiting suburban and exurban areas, right? So when people from the blue states, let me just decode that for you for just a second so you understand. So people are, when the Democrats laud the fact that the 10 largest metropolitan economies represent over 1/3 of the entire nation's GDP, it doesn't take into account the fact that most of the people in most of these cities, the people don't live in the actual dense urban areas. They live in the suburbs. So I actually live in a dense urban area at the moment here in downtown Kansas City, but most of the people in Kansas City don't live in the city, they live in the suburbs. So when the Democrats say, the 10 largest urban areas are 1/3 of the national GDP, that's like 1/3 of the entire nation's economy. Yeah, just don't forget that most of the people don't actually live downtown. They live out in the suburbs. In some of our most dynamic urban regions, such as Phoenix, virtually no part of the region can be made to fit into a Manhattan, Brooklyn, or even San Francisco-style definition of urbanity. Since 2010, more than 80% of all new jobs in our 53 leading metropolitan regions have been in suburbs. The San Jose area, the epicenter of the quote new economy, may be congested, but it is not traditionally urban. Most people there live in single-family houses, and barely 5% of commuters take transit. Want to find dense urbanity in San Jose? You'll miss it if you drive for more than 10 minutes. The argument made by the blue bourgeoisie is simple. Dense core cities and what goes on there is infinitely more important and consequential than the activities centered in the dumber suburbs and small towns. Yet, even in the ultra-blue Bay Area, the suburban valley's tech and STEM worker population per capita is twice that of San Francisco. In Southern California, suburban Orange County has over 30% more STEM workers per capita than far more urban Los Angeles. And it's not just California. Seattle's suburban Bellevue and Redmond are home to substantial IT operations, including the large Microsoft headquarters facility. Much of Portland's Silicon Forest is located in suburban Washington County. Indeed, a recent Forbes study found that the fastest growing areas for technology jobs outside the Bay Area are all cities without much of an urban core: Charlotte, Raleigh-Durham, Dallas-Fort Worth, Phoenix, and Detroit. In contrast, most traditionally urban cities such as New York and Chicago have middling tech scenes, with far fewer STEM and tech workers per capita than the national average. The blue bourgeois tends to see the activities that take place largely in the red states, for example, manufacturing and energy, as backward sectors. Yet, manufacturers employ most of the nation's scientists and engineers. Regions in Trump states associated with manufacturing, as well as fossil fuels, like Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, Detroit, Salt Lake, enjoy among the heaviest concentrations of STEM workers and engineers in the country, far above New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. Besides supplying the bulk of the food, energy, and manufactured goods consumed in blue America, these industries are among the country's most productive and still offer better paying options for blue-collar workers. Unlike a monopoly like Microsoft or Google, which can mint money by commanding market share, these sectors face strong domestic and foreign competition. From 97 to 2012, labor productivity growth in manufacturing, 3.3% per year, was a third higher than productivity growth in the private economy overall. For its part, the innovative American energy sector has essentially changed the balance of power globally, overcoming decades of dependence on such countries as Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Venezuela. Agriculture, almost all food, including in California, is grown in red-oriented areas, which continues to outperform competitors around the world. And exports? In 2015, the U.S. exported $2.23 trillion worth of goods and services combined. Of the total, only $716.4 billion, or about a third, consisted of services. Right? In contrast, manufactured goods accounted for 50% of all exports. Intellectual property payments, like royalties to Silicon Valley tech companies and entrepreneurs, amounted to $126.5 billion, just 18% of service exports and less than 6% of total exports of goods and services combined, barely even with agriculture. The blue bourgeois love to say everyone is moving back to the city, a meme amplified by the concentration of media in fewer places and the related collapse of local journalism. But not this journalism. This is local journalism you're hearing right here. Well, this is actually a national publication you're reading and listening to at the Libertarian Republic. But it's done not in the media bubbles. It's done out here in flyover country. Yet in reality, except for a brief period right after the 2008 housing crash, people have continued to move away from dense areas. Indeed, the most recent estimates suggest that last year was the best for suburban areas since the Great Recession. In 2012, the suburbs attracted barely 150,000 more people than core cities. But in 2016, the suburban advantage was 556,000. Just 10 of the nation's 53 largest metropolitan areas saw their core counties gain more people than their suburbs and exurbs. Overall, people are definitely not moving to the most preferred places for cosmopolitan scribblers. Last year, all 10 of the top gainers in domestic migration were Sunbelt cities. The list was topped by Austin, a blue dot in its core county surrounded by a rapidly growing, largely red Texas sea, followed by Tampa, St. Petersburg, Orlando, and Jacksonville in Florida, Charlotte and Raleigh in North Carolina, Las Vegas, Phoenix, and San Antonio. Overall, domestic migration trends affirm Trump-friendly locales. In 2016, states that supported Trump gained a net of 400,000 domestic migrants from states that supported Clinton. This includes a somewhat unnoticed resurgence of migration to smaller cities, areas often friendly to Trump and the GOP. Domestic migration has accelerated to cities between, with populations between 500,000 and 1 million people, while it's been negative among those with populations over 1 million. The biggest out-migration now takes place in LA, Chicago, and New York. And you're talking to an outlander right now. I did an out migration from New York and DC myself, just because it's just so damn expensive to live there. And you're surrounded by all of these, again, the cosmopolitan scribblers, and they're all just so self-absorbed, and there's just no reason for it. When I can run my business like I am right now, speaking to you through the powers of the internet, there's just no reason for me to be out there other than to spend way too much money to live in a place where I can feel better about myself because I'm surrounded by intelligentsia. I can tell you, life has gotten a lot better since I decided to move out here so I can be with my family and my friends and spend some time on the farm and to, you know, to live in real America. Real America. America. Of course, for the blue cognoscenti, there's only one explanation for such moves. Those people are losers and idiots, right? This is part of the new blue snobbery. Bad people, including the poor, are moving out to benighted places like Texas, but the talented are flocking in. Yet, like so many comfortable assertions, this one does not stand scrutiny. It's the middle class, particularly in their childbearing years, who, according to IRS data, are moving out of states like California and into ones like Texas. Since 2000, the Golden State has seen a net outflow of $36 billion from migrants. Millennials are widely hailed as the generation that will never abandon the deep blue city, but as they reach their 30s, aka me, they appear to be following their parents to the suburbs and exurbs, smaller cities, and the Sun Belt. This assures us that the next generation of Americans are far more likely to be raised in Salt Lake City, Atlanta, the four large Texas metropolitan areas, or in suburbs, than in the bluest metropolitan areas like New York, Seattle, or San Francisco, where the number of school-aged children trends well below the national average. This shift is being driven in large part by unsustainable housing costs, right? In the Bay Area, techies are increasingly looking for jobs outside the tech hub, and some companies are even offering cash bonuses to those willing to leave. A recent poll indicated that 46% of millennials in the San Francisco area Bay want to leave. The numbers of the best and brightest have been growing mostly in lower cost regions such as Austin, Orlando, Houston, Nashville, and Charlotte. Ultimately, in life as well as politics, people make choices of where to live based on economic realities. This may not apply entirely to the blue bourgeois living at the top of the economic food chain or by dint of being the spawn of the wealthy, but for most Americans aspiring to a decent standard of living, most critically the acquisition of decent living space, the expensive blue city is simply not practicable. Indeed, when the cost of living is taken into consideration, most blue areas, except for San Jose, Silicon Valley, where high salaries track the prohibitive cost of living, they provide a lower standard of living. The blue areas provide a lower standard of living. People in Houston, Dallas, Austin, Atlanta, and Detroit actually made more on their paychecks than those in New York, San Fran, or Boston. Deep blue Los Angeles ranked near the bottom among the largest metro areas. These mundanities suggest that the battlegrounds for the future will not be of the blue bourgeois choosing, but in suburbs, particularly around the booming periphery of major cities in red states. Many are politically contestable. Often the last big purple areas are in an increasingly polarized country. In a few of these kinds of areas, do you see 80 to 90% progressive or conservative electorates? Many split their votes, and a respectable number won for Trump and the GOP. If the blue bourgeois wants to wage war in these places, they need to not attack the suburban lifestyles clearly preferred by the clear majority. Blue America can certainly win the day if this administration continues to falter, proving all the relentless aspersions of its omnipresent critics. But even if Trump fails to bring home the bacon to his supporters, the progressives cannot succeed until they recognize that most Americans cannot, and often do not, want to live the blue bourgeois' preferred lifestyle. It's time for progressives to leave their bastions and bubbles and understand the country that they are determined to rule. Terrific article from the Daily Beast. Author Joel Kotkin writes a fantastic piece there. So do me a favor, if you enjoyed this, share this on your Facebook timeline. Share us with your friends. Just click that share button and make sure that everybody gets to listen to that. That's some pretty terrific reporting over there at the Daily Beast. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. Today is a beautiful day. I hope you have a wonderful week. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher. Also, you can just download the Podbean app. A lot of people really enjoy it. The host of this application, the host of this podcast, the hosting company, excuse me, is a company called Podbean, like P-O-D-B-E-A-N. And the application that they have is terrific. I use it all the time. It's got a lot of the big names. You know, it's got Bill Burr, Bill Maher, lots of my favorite comedians and hosts. Joe Rogan's on there as well. So if you guys want to get the podcast whenever it's updated immediately. If you download the Podbean app, you'll get it whenever I have a new show come out. As always, thank you very much to my sponsors, Adam Puff over at Haddonfield Financial Planning. Do me a favor, if you guys have some extra money tucked away that you are not storing in gold or in the happening bunker, then give it to Adam so he can grow it for you. Adam is definitely one of my closest friends and trusted advisors, and he will take care of that for you and make sure that your money makes money for you. All right, so have a fantastic week.